We don't know what to call this. This episode. Because like, we don't.
Our first debate is kind of just like the crux of the debate that we have a lot about a lot of things is like when you're debating about a fandom and like how certain characters do certain things or they don't do certain things, and there's plot holes or character flaws that you don't see fixed or improved or whatever, what should be included in the debate? Is it just I'm gonna try and talk a little lower because the audio last time was really loud.
Real quick, can you hear my mom right now? Because my nephew is waking up from his nap.
Not until you mentioned it. you mentioned it. No.
Audience, if you hear that, that's just my I have an infant nephew that I'm living at home, and my parents are watching my nephew from time to time. So. That is that.
Hi, Liam. What should be included? Is it just like if we're talking about, you know, Star Wars, is it just the trilogies or the trilogies, the saga? So is it just the prequels, the original, the sequel? Or should you include go ahead.
For this, when she says the first debate, yes, we're talking about episode one, but we're also talking about literally our first debate, and we've been friends for how many years and we still haven't
Five or six years, something like that.
It's just become more nuanced of a topic. For me, it's not like saying what counts is kind of weird. It's more like if you're watching something and then you have a problem with what it is, it's like a plot point. Plot points. Like a plot point that like is more of a plot hole to you. Does it still count if it's sort of, and you and I disagree on this term, but I can't think of a better term for it. If it's fixed in something else that's canon, but not in the same medium.
For example, if there's a plot hole about how Padme seems kind of like a wimp. I don't think you use this phrasing, but kind of a wimpy character, and the fact that she's supposed to be this kick-ass senator. And she, like in the prequels, she kind of turns into this almost like Mary Sue wimpy character, I'm in love with Anakin character. But in the Clone Wars TV show, which I have seen, Christian has not, it's on his list. Mm-hmm. And in the books, there's been a book, not a series, but there was two books based on the Padme's time before Attack of the Clones and after Phantom Menace, so like when she was first being a senator in the Galactic Republic, and then another book of her just being elected Queen of Naboo, so like just prior and actually going into episode one. And so I've read those books, and so I know that they have, and I've seen Clone Wars, so I know how they developed her character, which they didn't. My argument is that she's a supporting character on screen. Awesome character, one of my favorite Star Wars characters, but she is a supporting character to the overarching narrative of it's the Jedi's story. It is the Skywalker story and his supporting cast of characters. So they may not have had time to fully develop her character, but nonetheless, she is a developed character.
Yeah, see, that's where I would disagree. Sort of disagree. So yeah, wimpy is the wrong term, but we're given this like she's a senator, but she's like a political badass almost, and not just politically but physically as well. She's this character, like no nonsense character. She was an elected queen, which in and of itself, side note, she was a queen in the first movie, and then she said they made an elected position in the second, and that was just always weird to me, but that's neither here nor there. She goes from this to like blaster shooting person in the second movie to the third movie. She's like barely on screen. And when she is on screen, she's just sort of a pregnant damsel who doesn't really do anything and then dies of a broken heart.
Which I do agree that the broken heart line, I personally, and this is also where we disagree, of you being like, okay, this is what the character said, or this is what they did. I think this is where your film perspective comes in. This is what it is. And I kind of look at things more nuanced in like, but what are they really saying? Like, no one, the only person who actually says that she like died of a broken heart or she lost the will to live is that medical droid. Like, and it's a droid. Like, it can't, it's looking up statistics and coming to a conclusion that is a binary conclusion. It's not human. It's not even an alien species with thoughts and emotions. It's a difference engine. And so that's the only person that actually says that. My working theory, and again, it's a theory. Like, we don't know what is going on in George Lucas's mind when he created all this, unless he tells us, is that she's not someone who's force sensitive. She doesn't use the force. And she's carrying not one, but two children who, as we see in the subsequent movies, are force wielding children. Even Leia, to a degree, in the later movies, you can argue to which the degree which she uses the force or not, but they both do have force wielding abilities. And I, from the jump of me seeing Revenge of the Sith, I was always really curious of how would someone who does not have that ability, how does that affect them? And so that was always kind of the take I had on it.
Which makes sense, but at the same time, if you're, this is definitely from a filmmaker's perspective, if you're writing down the dialogue of she lost the will to live, if you're like, if you wrote that in there and there's no other explanation, then generally speaking, that's what the audience is going to take as the actual thing. So unless if it's not hinted at, then yeah, there's an interpretation to be had, which is definitely what you've done. But it comes down to what the author writer has sort of intended and what you're going to take away from it, which is what's great about fandoms in general, is that we definitely have our own takeaways and we definitely have our own headcanons for sure. But I think there's still a responsibility there that if he intended for it to be that she had Leia and Luke and that killed her, then they should have alluded to that. There's no story reason why you need to hide that and just have a droid being like, she lost the will to live. So I think personally that he intended it to be she had a broken heart over the fact that her secret husband turned to the dark side, which is fine, I guess, but it just feels like a betrayal of character to me.
I don't know because, and again, I'm using other textual evidence, and I guess this is where the crux of the argument comes in. Like, if I've read these books, or if I've watched another series that is canon that goes into her demeanor and her background, like, I've seen what they've done with her in Clone Wars, and I know that, like, there's no way that she's just going to fall over and die because Anakin turned to the dark side. Like, in
which one... I think we agree on that. I think my thing is, my thing more is, it feels like a betrayal of, not betrayal is a strong word. It feels like a writing mistake, or like it just writing, it feels like George Lucas didn't really think about her character there. He just thought about the grand story, and it's just kind of a thing that was sort of glossed over, where you're approaching it more from the standpoint of, I understand these things and I don't think she would die of a broken heart either, so I'm going to read into it based on this other stuff that's not in the movie to sort of have my own answer. So it's more, we both have the same problem, I think. It's just we're approaching it from different ways.
Yeah. Well, and also it's coming from different creators, but in all of the creation of Clone Wars or the books that I have read, I know that, because I've looked into the creators of these works, and I know that Dave Filoni is the creator of Clone Wars, executive producer of Clone Wars, or director, executive director. Not film, not my area of expertise. So that is all you. That is all you.
He's probably the showrunner,
which is the reason. Like, the reason why he was able to get so nuanced and get into these characters' heads is because Star Wars was his favorite thing when he was a kid, and he studied what George Lucas had like written and said, and then he went, and when he got hired to do Clone Wars, he went and talked to George Lucas and was like, okay, what was your plan for this? What were you going to do for Plo Koon if you had like all the time in the world? And he went and picked George Lucas's brain. So that when he went in and created this, he wasn't just going like, okay, this is my Star Wars show. He was trying to extend George Lucas's legacy. And so a lot of the things that he's done were things that he kind of asked George Lucas about and were saying, hey, I don't just want to take what you did and just create something new. Like, I want to build off of what your original ideas were that maybe you didn't get to flesh out entirely. And so that's why I kind of maybe trust these extra sources, if you want to call them extra sources, is because I know that the creators behind them have talked to the original creator and they're trying to do the series justice by kind of having everything connect, which not everything's going to connect. There's always going to be plot holes. I don't think there's a show or movie created that doesn't have some sort of plot hole.
No, there is no perfect movie or art in general. George Lucas has come close to, so that's, I think that's why.
We have our first freeze.
Even this fandom is because Star Wars is a great piece of art. And there's a lot of, no matter if you like the prequels, if you like the sequels, if you like the original trilogy, if you like all of it, it's something that's pervasive in our culture. And it's such a great thing that when there are these minor things that are, that we don't like, it sort of becomes, it becomes a big minor, it turns from minor to major problem because we love it so much. So what were we gonna say?
I said, and I'm wondering, because Star Wars is the biggest argument we have with this particular argument, because it is such a big universe and there is so much extra media, is I guess what I'm going to term this, is outside of the movies. You have TV shows, and I mean, how many TV shows, Star Wars TV shows, did Disney Plus just release that they were going to make? A whole bunch. I'm super excited. Super excited for. But I'm wondering, once, you know, Marvel's MCU, I feel like, is going down this path of creating these extra media things. And there are some, there's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and different TV shows, but they're not as big as the Star Wars universe has. They're starting to get that way, but and then Game of Thrones is going to start doing it as well. They have a prequel in pre-production right now. So I'm wondering, is as time goes on, if we're going to have this argument about more fandoms than just Star Wars, because like it has seemed that this has pretty much been contained to Star Wars at the moment.
Oh, I guarantee you we're gonna have this argument over at least Marvel. Because my main, so the crux of the argument, or another crux I should say, that we've had is sort of along the same grain, is whether or not the interconnectivity of them. So you have these movies, you have these TV shows, you have these books, and your enjoyment of the movie is, my argument is, if a movie needs to have a something answered in a TV show, then I don't think that's an effective movie. I think you should be able to watch the movie or watch the show separately, and your enjoyment of either one, or your engagement of either one, doesn't require the other one. So I don't need to watch the TV show in order to enjoy the movie. But if I do, it's supplementary. It doesn't fix things. Where I think that's
where we slightly disagree. Like, I don't think that you should have to watch Clone Wars, the TV show, in order to enjoy what the prequels did. However, I think that because of where Clone Wars fits into the Star Wars saga, the Skywalker saga, I guess we're calling it right now, because there's going to be so many other offshoots. The original movie saga does feel like a missing piece is put into place. And I don't think that missing piece could have been satisfied by, like, if you stuck a fourth movie in there. Like, if you had Attack of the Clones, and then you had Revenge of the Sith, and they're both tail ends of each side of the war. Like, Attack of the Clones starts the Clone Wars, and then Revenge of the Sith ends it. And in between, you have this whole space of time of, okay, what happened in this space of time, and how were the battles fought, and all of that. I don't think you could have fleshed all of that out in another movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's also part of why people part of why people dislike the prequels, is because it feels like there's this huge lump of time that's lost. And while I don't think you need to see it to enjoy it, I think that it does really enhance it. And I'm also one of those people that, and I always have been, when I was a little kid, I would watch a show on television. Like, I watched a lot of different TV shows with my mom. I watched, I don't know if anyone remembers this show, JAG. It was like a lawyer procedural show about the US Navy. And I was that person that, like, I would go and once the episode was over, I would go and like look up all the minutiae on the internet because I wanted to know all the little itty bitty details. So I've always been that person that's had extra media connected to whatever I was watching. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so for me, it doesn't seem like a big jump to be like, oh, that wasn't answered in this movie, but you know what? There is a TV show. I was going to watch it anyway, but maybe my questions will be answered there. So maybe that's why it doesn't seem like a jump to me.
Yeah, well, I have the same thing, but I guess my main thing, and maybe that's just from the writer's standpoint of trying to create my own stories, is that I don't mind when there's a missing piece that I can go and then find if it doesn't affect the characters of the plot. Like, if it's not a major thing, but like, if it's a major thing, like going back to Padme, going technically to Leia, talking, which we haven't discussed this discussion before. And we said, when we were having this discussion, we were talking about, we should have recorded this, but of Leia remembering her mother and like Luke asking her, like, do you remember your mother? And she was like, I remember her being beautiful and all this stuff. And then George Lucas goes and turns around and makes the prequels after the fact and has her die while they're babies. Now, for me, that's a bit of a plot hole because they're babies. They're not going to remember what their mother looks like. And you can use the, like, it's the Force or whatever, but to me, that's a cop-out. But if you're going, if you turn around and have something, like, answered in, like, Star Wars Rebels or something else that answers that kind of plot hole, or even more of a major one, to me, that's sort of a cheat. It's, you should have, when you're making a film or a film series, you should have those answers in the film series, to me. And then anything else outside of that should enhance your viewing or answer missing pieces that weren't really plot relevant, but not so much fix what are my, and I'm using the term fix what in my opinion are problems in the actual story itself.
And from my point of view, like I do understand that to an extent, but also from my point of view, it's, yes,
I just, from my point of view, the Jedi are
from the certain point of view. Can you tell we're geeks? From my point of view, it's, I don't know how to explain this, but it's, you, that wasn't something that you had to address in that scenario. And so when you go back,
well, that just might have been my example though. True. I'm trying to think of a better example, but valid. Yeah, I got what you're saying.
Valid, but like, and again, you may not have had the screen time or the, you know, maybe there was an original script idea to have them maybe Leia stay with Padme. Like, that's the thing is, like, I don't know all the ins and outs of what their original story ideas were. And you never know what gets left in the writing room or on the cutting room floor. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
I don't personally think those count.
I don't think they count either. I'm just saying, like, what, like, with certain things in any, we're using Star Wars as an example, but like, what could have happened is there could have been an idea for that, and then something was cut, or there was another plan, and so there wasn't, that was the fix that they had. I'm using your word fix. And so then another opportunity for Star Wars media comes around, and you can tell that story the way you originally wanted to be told. I think Ahsoka is a really good example of that. And I know you haven't seen Clone Wars, but you know, you've seen Mandalorian, you in general know who Ahsoka is.
And I watched YouTube videos that probably have spoiled some stuff for me.
That was good scenes. That was a really big plot hole complaint that people had with Anakin in the prequels was, oh, he's so, you know, bratty and just disrespectful and arrogant in episode two. And then he just goes to being this, like, still brash and still arrogant, but kind of more of a nuanced character in episode three. And people didn't think that that could have been achieved just by being in the Clone Wars and fighting in the Clone Wars. And I can't remember. I've seen an interview and I don't remember if it was always George Lucas's headcanon that Anakin had a Padawan, or if that was a creative decision when Clone Wars creative. He's like, okay, well, now I have a show in which to display and more fully develop Anakin and Obi-Wan's characters. Let's look at what, you know, what we didn't cover in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, and like how did we get from one movie to the next? And he was like, well, you give him someone to teach, you give him an apprentice to impart his wisdom on. And even though he still comes out arrogant and brash in episode three, he is a little more grown up and reserved because he was responsible for someone else. He had to teach someone else how not to make the same mistakes that he did. And I think I think in what you're saying, that could be described as a quote unquote fix for Anakin's plot hole from episode two to episode three. But I don't view it as a fix. I just view it as an opportunity came up for additional development of this character, and this is how we did it.
I would slightly agree with you. My main issue with this specifically, with Anakin's character changing as much as it did, my problem with that is that why didn't they do anything in the movie to sort of explain it? Like in the movie, they could have easily had a throwaway line that sort of, even as cheesy as this sounds, which to be fair, they have a lot of cheesy dialogue. As cheesy as this sounds, it could be like Obi-Wan be like, you've grown so much, blah, 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 blah. Or even maybe mentioning Ahsoka. I know Ahsoka, without delving into too many spoilers for myself, because I want to be surprised when I watch the show, but I do know, generally speaking, that she had a fallout with the Jedi Order or something like that, and then she's gone. But having some kind of scene that sort of explains it a little better, that like his character growth a little better, because that's a lot of what stories are character growth. Like, so your character has a problem, and then they have a problem they want to fix, they have a problem they don't even know about, like a want and a need, and then the way stories go is that they, at the end of that and through different circumstances, a lot of problems they face, they may not get the want answered, but they definitely get the need answered. And I think that's something where, yes, it's in the Clone Wars, and that's great that's in the Clone Wars, but you need to have a hint, to me, you need to have a hint of that for the people that aren't watching Clone Wars in the movies, so it's not jarring to see, which his character arc, or like his character change between the two movies isn't huge, but you need to have something to sort of...
Like, it's huge enough, it's big enough people noticed it. It's big enough that people are like, what happened? So let me ask you this. Were you that person when you were in high school and college, when you were writing papers, that you had an outline of like everything that you were going to put in the paper and then you wrote it?
Sometimes.
Because I'm the exact opposite. And I think this is why I'm defending this point of view so much, is because when I write a story, and I was a creative writing minor in college. When I was writing a story, I had no idea where the story was going. And it's kind of this adage when you're an author is you let the characters tell you where you're going. So there's sometimes where I didn't realize that my character, you know, had a secret twin sister. That's totally not, I didn't write that ever. But it's hard to explain when you're talking to someone who doesn't have that creative brain of, and I know you have a creative brain, but that creativity of specifically writing stories or novels in that way of where I have an idea of where I want it to go, but I don't have all the things fleshed out. Like I'm writing as I go. And so I don't think you necessarily have to have, like when Attack of the Clones was created in 2002, I believe. I am not 100% sure on them. I'm pretty sure it was 2002 because I know Phantom Menace was 1999. I know that. And I know that Revenge of the Sith was 2005. Pretty sure Attack of the Clones is 2002. George Lucas might not even known that Ahsoka existed, but like in my brain, she still existed. He just didn't know that yet.
Well, yeah, no, I agree with that. My thing is more, he knows where his character, and then like this is why I think this debate really circles around Star Wars. And yeah, we might talk about this again with the MCU, depending on how they go. But with Star Wars, the way it was written was he wrote the story, and then he was like, "Ooh, what would have happened before this story?" And then he wrote the prequels. So there's a lot of like knowing where the character is going to end up, and then writing how they get there. He did know where he wanted Anakin to be. So,
fair.
And it's fine to have Anakin be this sort of bright, and he gets a little flack for this. I think he's less bright than people make him out to be, but this bratty Padawan in Attack of the Clones, and then have him be this master, or he honestly deserved to be a master, no matter what the council says.
Yeah, I don't have an argument there. I don't have an argument for you there.
Yeah, this master, or what I'm going to call him, Master Knight, whatever, in Revenge of the Sith, there needs to be, in Revenge of the Sith, and when you're writing that, there needs to be some sort of way to connect them. There needs to be some connectivity within the movies, in my opinion, or within that movie itself, of the bratty child to the adult. Like he's matured off screen. And if you didn't want to tell that story, which I mean, I know the story was told eventually, but if they're not going to tell that story at that point, that's fine, because you can pick and choose when you tell a story in a character's life. But since you already had him as the bratty child, if this is the next part of that thing, you need to have some sort of way to bring up to speed. And Attack of the Clones actually does that. With reference to like Phantom Menace, him being a child and then him being a teenager in this, they have a scene where they sort of show like, where are they now? And sort of in the elevator scene, in my opinion, it's not the best scene in the world, but they have the elevator scene where they're sort of showing Obi-Wan and Anakin's relationship. And you see he was this kid and now he's this. So to sort of have that in Revenge of the Sith would have been great for me. Now, I don't know how to do that, because Revenge of the Sith probably has one of the best openings in Star Wars ever.
And it's kind of hard to tweak that. No argument there.
So, and I guess, I don't know, maybe he did try to do it with that scene, because there's definitely, you're introduced to the new relationship they have.
Oh yeah, for sure. Scene. Like you can see there, and almost that scene, in my opinion, almost mirrors and foreshadows the fight scene, because I call what they're doing in that's the opening scene where they're flying through the barrage of the fight and the battle. I call that mirror flying. And then I call what they're doing in their battle mirror fighting, because they're almost literally fighting themselves. Like Anakin is almost literally fighting Anakin, and Obi-Wan is almost literally fighting Obi-Wan. Like it's even phrased that way in the novelization for Revenge of the Sith, which I know novelizations kind of get a bad rap for, tend to be a little bit janky or whatever. I don't know if that's the right word, but again, I like novelizations, because it also gives you kind of an insight into characters that didn't have a lot of dialogue in the movie, and you can more see in their head of what they're going through. But I also don't know where that falls into canon, if novelizations are considered canon or not. That one's a little gray for me, so I don't really pull from that, but I do know that you kind of get more of an in-depth view of inside people's minds, because you can do that in a novel versus in a movie or a TV show. You can only see what's happening on the screen, which is why I only took one screenwriting class and like a whole bunch of fiction writing classes, because I did not like screenwriting.
There are ways to do that. If they don't come, I think that's the problem. Sort of side note on just writing in general, I think that's the point where she didn't like it as much, because that's showing what's in the character's mind isn't up to the writer for film. Like you write as much as you can in the script, but at the end of the day, that's the job of the director, the camera person, and the actor.
Right.
Because you can write in a script on like, this guy is walking down the street and he sees this newspaper and like on the gutter and thinks it reminds me of blah 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 or something like that. But in a movie, you're gonna have to write Guy walks down the street, looks down, sees newspaper, close up on newspaper, close up on guy, and then sort of go from there how you want to address that. And
like
then,
you have to say the visuals or have a flashback or something.
And you can say in the script maybe that it reminds him, we get the sense that it reminds him of blah blah blah. But then it's not up to the writer at that point to make the audience understand that. It's up to the actor and the camera work.
And I like making the audience understand.
Yeah. You want to talk directly to the audience, whereas the script is talking about outlines in freeform writing. A script is literally the outline of the movie. The script isn't the final product normally. The script is a blueprint of what the final product's going to be.
And I've always hated outlines. Like from the time I learned what they were, I feel boxed in when I'm writing with an outline. Even like when I was writing academic papers in college and grad school, I very rarely had, unless it was an assignment and I was forced to, I rarely had an outline. Like I had I knew where I wanted to go and I had my research and my sources and all of that. And I knew where I wanted to go. But if I sat there with an outline, I felt too boxed in versus just me typing on my computer, everything just flows out.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I forgot what we were talking about that led us to that part.
I mean,
yeah, we can cut out this silence or leave it in.
I'm just,
you guys will find out. Staring
at my background, right, which if you can't tell, Padme is probably one of my top five characters. Fluctuates between Anakin, Padme, and Ahsoka on any and Obi-Wan. Those four on any given day just kind of fight for my top four favorite characters. And I have, for my virtual background, I do have a pick shot of Naboo.
Yeah, I don't know if what format this is going to be distributed in, but we are currently on a Zoom call because it is COVID. Yes,
because you know COVID and live not so close to each other at the moment.
Meanwhile, I have a physical background of my swords. So a little more background on who I am. Outside of filmmaking, a general hobby of mine is something called HEMA, just historical European martial arts. So I just have swords lying around because I like to fight people, which I can't do now because of COVID. I also, when she mentioned the mirroring of the fights, I wanted to interject with HEMA stuff because
I'm gonna interject with communication stuff just because I have a graduate degree in communication. I need to use it somehow. So
yeah, now I have an undergrad degree in film, I guess.
But you also have a lot of knowledge in sword fighting and HEMA, so like,
yeah, and I'm trying to learn more as I go.
Drop it in.
Well, okay, so that fight is an example of great film writing and not so great technical fighting. Like there's a lot of sword waving, which is not in that fight, but there's some fights where it's what's it called? It's people can't see me because it's a podcast where you hold your sword against the other person's sword and you stare at each other and go grr. And it's a great visual tool, especially because the swords sort of frame the faces and it's a great like time for dialogue between people, but it's really bad sword fighting because there's no strategic reason to do that. And if you actually do that and the other person feels you pushing on them, all they have to do is release their pressure and you're going to fall on your face and they're going to get you. So I don't know where I was going with that.
you were just interjecting with a bit of sword fighting trivia. Although hypothetically, we don't know, this is Star Wars land. Does the physics work the same with a lightsaber?
Personally, I mean, we could have a whole episode on this because I can go on and on about this. But in my personal opinion, I think the physics would be similar. I mean, you also have to include the force. Like we talk about different ways of different tactics in fighting. There's a whole concept of provoker, taker, hitter. You provoke someone to attack a certain area of your body, so that way you know where their sword's going to go. You take their sword, as in you block in a way that prevents them from attacking you, and then you hit them. There's like different stages within that. When you have the force, it's kind of difficult. You can't provoke someone to do something. Like if you're going to try to fake them out, if they have the Force, because they know, they can sense what you're really going to do.
Especially if it's Anakin and Obi-Wan, who,
yeah,
so again, I call it mirror fighting for a reason.
Yeah, they're sort of portrayed as this brother or father-son, depending on what part of the prequels, but relationship. So it's going to be different. They know each other well enough that's going to be, that would be a very interesting fight, which it was an interesting fight. As far as the physics of everything, there's definitely some human YouTubers that have talked about this, but there's no edge to a lightsaber. It's every part of it is an edge, basically. So it's like having a baton that you can get cut with at any side. So it's definitely not something we have in the real world. So definitely that would really affect the way you fight. It wouldn't be what George Lucas tried to, at least in the original trilogy, was to have sort of like a samurai feel. It wouldn't be that. It wouldn't be kendo, which is a single-edged weapon. It would be more, honestly, it would be more like stick fighting. It's just you don't have to hit as hard to do damage. I think there's one video talked about it'd be more like fencing, like sport fencing, because in sport fencing, you really just need to touch them. You don't need to actually like push in enough to stab them. Where a lightsaber would be very similar. You really need to touch someone with the burning light in order to do any damage.
Right.
And also something that I don't think is utilized at all in Star Wars, if like maybe once or twice, is the fact that you can turn off your weapons. So going back to the facing each other, if you're like swinging really hard at me, at my blade, and like you're our blades clash, and like you're pushing down on me,
you just shut your weapon off.
Turn off my lightsaber, sidestep you, turn it back on. I've gotten a new cutting angle on you that you can't really counterattack. So it definitely would be different.
That's interesting. Pivoting from our delve into sword fighting.
This is like episode 2.0 or whatever, something now.
1.5.
Yeah. Star Wars 1.5.
Other thoughts on this topic? I'm trying to think, do we have this argument with anything else? Like,
I don't think we've delved enough into the lore of anything else to have the argument.
Like How I Met Your Mother, which we both are also super nerds on. It's, I'm sure once we get to that episode, we'll talk about why we are that way.
I'm sure we have,
but it doesn't have, it doesn't have enough extra media, as I have decided to dub it. It doesn't have enough extra media to have that argument. I mean, it has supplemental websites that are actual things, Game of Thrones doesn't have that as of yet. It will. Marvel, yeah, a little bit.
Because Marvel has an MCU, which I still think Marvel is the first cinematic universe, but Star Wars is definitely the beta version of that with their saga. Because theirs sort of follows kind of one family, really two people, a father and a son throughout most of its, or now three, I guess, a father, son, and a granddaughter of.
we will get to that argument at some point.
But they're very much of a singular line.
That is another episode.
Star Wars is basically a line with a bunch of other lines on the side. And it's only now turning into a web. And Marvel has started as a web. It started as a web. Spider-Man web. So definitely, like, they're not the same. So they're definitely going to be interesting to see if we have this argument over anything else. But currently, and this argument has... We've had this argument so many times naturally. Like, we're recording it right now, and you guys are listening to it right now. And if you're our friends, maybe you've heard it before, but this is something that just has come up naturally. So I can't of something. Yeah. Probably double digits at this point. And I don't think we're ever going to reach a resolution. I don't think we've reached a resolution here. All we've done is understand each other's arguments a little better. But I think there's a point where you're standing, there's a point where I'm standing, and that's just where it is, and it's fine. That's actually kind of cool that two people could have two separate reactions and have all of these agreements and disagreements over the same story.
What a concept, right?
Yeah.
That people could actually disagree and get along.
Yeah.
That was not shade at all.
Mm-mm. But I don't think we've naturally sort of had this debate over any other work. We'll see with Nick now with like Falcon and Captain America, or Falcon and
Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier. And all these other stories that are sort of outside of the main Avengers storyline. And now that they've actually sort of capped off that too. Agreed. We'll see how it goes. But
any final thoughts on this topic?
Not without going into a circle. talking about if we might have done that already of what we're talking about. Your stance is basically, if I understand correctly, your stance isn't really that it's being fixed. It's that you have more personal interaction, I think, and yet it doesn't necessarily matter what's been put on screen because you have that sort of outside interaction and sort of ideas with it, which is cool. I have that as well, but I also think, and maybe this is just an occupational thing, what's put on screen, like, is that's it. That's the finality of it. That's in its own, yeah, it might be part of a larger world, but when judging if something's good individually, then that individual thing needs to be a complete work. So I appreciate the Clone Wars and I appreciate the Mandalorian now and all this stuff. I'm going to delve more into the Clone Wars. I think the Clone Wars should actually be able to stand on its own without the movies. I think the movies need to stand on its own without the Clone Wars and et cetera. But together, I think together they should enhance, but separately they should still stand on their own.
All right, fair enough. I believe the opposite, but that's where we're gonna land, is we just have different opinions on what should be included in a set entity.
Yeah. And I mean, fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, you and I will both enjoy the movies and the shows.
True.
We'll just enjoy them in different ways, but that's the absolutely cool thing about true. Fandoms in general is Star Wars fandom kind of has a bad rap, and rightly earned, unfortunately, of being very high strung and not being very forgiving. But I think if you step back for a second and just be like, they're going to enjoy this in their way, I'm going to enjoy this in mine, and we're going to enjoy different parts of Star Wars, I think it's fine. I think fandoms have a great, especially the Star Wars fandom, has a great opportunity for stuff like this, where it's, we don't agree and we're not going to agree, but we still both love it and enjoy it. And if there was no COVID and there was another movie going out, you know we'd watch it together.
Absolutely.
Like, we probably would have watched The Mandalorian together if circumstances were different.
Probably would have had a watch party with everyone. Yeah,
exactly. We'd be having this argument in the living room with like five other people.
True. Well, we do have some social media if you would like to follow us. And I think I'm going to put a discussion question up there of kind of which more stance do you guys take? Do you kind of take more of a Christian stance of each kind of film entity should stand on their own, or mine where it's everything can be more interconnected and enhanced with the supplemental media? Find us at Plot Points with Amanda and Christian on Facebook and also on Instagram. And we will see you guys next time with talking about some other amazing fandom conundrum that we have. Bye.
Bye.